I'm LaDonna Zoll. I'm the acting curator for the Heart Mountain Wyoming Foundation. My father was a pipeliner, and so I lived in 38 states in Mexico and Canada before I was 10. And when we arrived in Powell, the camp was there, but I didn't know what it was, and no one could answer my questions. So eventually my father picked up a military policeman who was hitchhiking, and a fella said, "I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the last train leaves the camp tomorrow." So we went out. Dad took us out of school and went out on a very cold November day with the snow going horizontally as it does in Wyoming, and watched. And the people came down over the hill by threes, and they looked so miserably cold. And on either side of them, periodically, was a guard with his long woolen overcoat, his rifle, and a bayonet on the end. And they got on the train and left. And I couldn't figure it out because the war had been over for 2 months. So after teaching for all these years and going through all the classes that the college had to offer that I was interested in, I decided to involve myself in Heart Mountain and find out some answers. The people here had had very little contact with the Japanese. I had seen groups of the Japanese American ladies in town, and they seemed so happy and they were so pretty. The men were always very sullen, very sad looking. We couldn't really see the barracks. We could see the chimney of the hospital. We saw the guards at the gate. But other than that, it was kind of, you know, hidden behind the hill. Didn't know what was going on. There was a time when, of course, all the young men had gone into service, and so they took the Japanese into the fields to top beats and that sort of thing. And that was great. The farmers really appreciated that. But the town fathers decided that they should be against the Japanese coming to town. And so there was a petition that was signed by many, many people in town opposing the people coming to town. And the assistant director at the camp went to the Powell and Cody Chambers of Commerce, but said, "Okay, we will not let people come to town, but we'll not let them work in the fields either." And that was a very quick change of mind because they did need the labor. It was sort of interesting because I had seen the signs, "No Japs," and a lady from Sunlight Basin, Allie Ritter Brown was her name, came to Cody and saw the signs and was absolutely horrified. She went to the Cody Club and told them that within 5 days, if those signs were not down, she was going to go to the camp, the Heart Mountain Relocation Center, and sign up an internee for every county office. And 5 days later, she came back and all the signs were gone but one. I don't know what the relationship of the military police was to the people generally. I do know that three of the men decided that they would see if they were American citizens, and they walked out the front gate. And the sentry said, "Hey, guys, come back here and show me your pass." And they said, "We don't have a pass. We're trying to find out if we're American citizens or not." And this young soldier yelled back at him and said, "Hey, fellas, please come back. Otherwise, I'm going to have to shoot you." So they did come back. We did have some escapees. 14 were arrested by the MPs. They were 12 to 14 years old, had sneaked out under the fence and were sledding on cardboard down the foothills. But they caught them. There was nowhere for them to go. There was a great deal of malnutrition initially. So they decided they needed to do some agriculture. And one of the fellas went back to California, was permitted to go back. He had a seed company, and he brought the seeds back to plant. And the crops were beautiful. I haven't seen any as pretty since they had theirs. And one of the farmers, a number of years ago, a Caucasian farmer, came up to James Ito, who had been the assistant superintendent for agriculture, and thanked him and said, "You taught us how to farm." And with the camp being built, that probably brought this area out of the Depression by hiring 2,400 men and women to work and raise the camp. They have been a great attribute to this area. Hopefully they'll continue to be. After the camp was closed, the government decided that they would make homesteads out of this area. And there were drawings for veterans. They had to have presumably some farming experience, which was kind of questionable in a lot of cases, have $1,000 and be a veteran. And if they drew a homestead, they got two barracks, a bucket, a broom, and a shovel. They had to move the barracks themselves, and in doing so, there's a little white building still out on the hill there. And originally that was part of a Caucasian apartment because it had a kitchen and a bathroom. But the Homesteaders Extension Club met there after the camp was closed. And they noticed that a number of internees were coming back and trying to find where they'd lived in the camp. And the barracks were disappearing. And so they decided that they would con their husbands into using their front loaders and their trucks and trucking big boulders down to make the initial memorial. And from that came the foundation. And 2 years ago, we were able to open the Interpretive Center. I joined the foundation about 14 years ago. And I realized that members of the foundation were accepting archives and manuscripts and sticking them under their bed and in their landfill rooms. So I managed to decide that I was going to be a curator, and I went to all the museums in the area to find out how to do that. Learned a great deal, took many workshops, began collecting things, and I had everything in a vault about the size of this room and a little shed, a storage shed. And it kept expanding and expanding until I took the better part of a large warehouse in Powell, and finally it's at the Interpretive Learning Center now. We're just hoping that as time passes, more and more people will come to see what happened here so that it can never happen again.